Mini episode 703 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by First Down Scouting, delivering the most thorough scouting service available, uncovering the NFL stars of tomorrow. Follow them on the web at the number one, stdownscouting.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the History of the Royal Rumble Anthology in the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, your tour guides through history. Stopping off today at 2009, part 6B of the anthology. Of course, if you want any notes on how the Rumble came to be, the origins of it, whatever, go back to 1A, 1988. We cover all that stuff there in the first 10 to 15 minutes. Subsequently, we just go year to year. Big picture stuff, head into the Rumble, talk about the card, most of the emphasis on the match itself, and a little bit about where they went from there. We always have some macro and then some micro. It's funny because, Kyle, as you had noted previously here, I, for whatever reason, had taken to using the back of envelopes here to just jot down my notes on. This is my sparsest one yet. Sometimes I overflow the back of one envelope and have to go on to another part. I go to about two-thirds of an envelope for this one here. I don't have a lot to say, macro or micro, on a show that, again, to me and you, I know from talking off air, the big story here is WrestleMania 25 coming up. This is supposed to be the setup. This is your chance to do something really, really big. And the biggest story of early 2009 is not what they did, because it was underwhelming in so many ways. It's what they didn't do. And it's a weird year historically in that regard, where you're looking at what they could have done and all these missed opportunities potentially. And what they did is almost secondary, because it didn't really seem to matter.
No, they relied on the WrestleMania brand name.
Yeah.
And I guess that worked. And it's because the show actually beat not their own projections, but I think the projections of everyone but them.
Okay.
I mean, people were thinking the number was going to be pretty scary going into WrestleMania. And the Rumble number, the reason that people were kind of had those scary projections is the Rumble number was way down from 08. We talked about
their own projections were higher.
Oh, they were projecting.
Who
over
was doing
a million.
Their projections? Mitt Romney's pollsters?
I don't know.
How could their projections have been higher?
Maybe Rand Paul's pollsters. Zing!
Oh, come on, that's too soon, brother. Okay. Too soon.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll get to the road to WrestleMania because it is a week one, but they wound up doing okay for WrestleMania 25, even if the card, save for one very good match, is generally considered to be underwhelming. But you talked about how you didn't have that many notes. I have a ton of notes for this show.
Interesting.
And part of that was I did more homework on this than I did for a lot of tests in college. Now, part of that reason was...
Where are we setting the bar on that?
That's a good point. Hey, I graduated with honors, man.
Ooh.
That's an indictment with higher education, if I've ever heard one.
Wow.
There we go. Yeah.
Got out better than I did. Wow.
Yeah. What do you got to say about that?
I don't know that anybody in the audience would have guessed that, but okay.
What do you got to say about that? Hey, what do you know? Having liberal professors paid off.
Well, yeah, exactly. This guy's politics.
Yes, I completely agree with everything in this paper.
You didn't happen to have Tommy Takami Walker for any of your classes, did you?
No.
Okay.
No, he would have been too right for me. Anyway, back to the Royal Rumble 2009. But anyway, so I called this part six, what the split slash decline of the Rumble.
Yeah.
We'll get to the decline of the Rumble in subsequent years.
Yes.
But what the split kind of plays off our previous part, part five, mm-hmm. if you're keeping score at home, which was called Split Happens. Obviously, you know, the brand split, which
right.
was done very hard and fast in 02, and then, you know, starting in with the 03 Rumble, mm-hmm. you had Raw and SmackDown. Where I'm going with this is, as I ramble incoherently as I often do, I took a lot of notes on this because I wasn't watching as much during this period,
mm-hmm.
which is why I had a lot of notes. And I kind of expected not to care about this show. With the brand itself, we talked about this in the last part with 08. The brand extension had been really softened.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of reasons for that. SmackDown's TV situation got a little tenuous. I think they just kind of gave up on a hard split, too, because of a lack of star power.
Right.
You know, they kind of started doing these super shows in 08.
Well,
things like
it didn't get as soft as it would in the fall of 2011, but you're right. There was a road from like about 2008 to 2011 to where it was starting to go that way,
yeah.
before the split was gone altogether.
Yeah, so it hasn't happened yet, but there are signs of the there are continued signs throughout 08. A lot of title changes, too.
Right.
And there aren't a lot of fresh matchups, and they're switching. They're having to switch guys to brands, and there's still not a lot of fresh matchups when they switch. But anyway... I didn't expect to care a lot about this card, but as I kind of delved back into the era, they had some interesting stuff going on in the fall of 08. Chris Jericho was really hot.
Yes.
Edge is still really good.
Well, you talked about it in the previous one. You asked me at Rumble 08, were we into peak Edge, and I thought yes, and we talked about this off air. 2008, 2009, I thought was peak Jericho. 2009 was peak Orton.
Yeah, we'll talk about
So you had a
Orton,
lot
obviously.
Of guys. You're right about that because you had a lot of guys who were coming to the forefront. And when I sit here and I bemoan the lost generation and the fact that there should have been a lot more guys that came out of the 2000s that are still a big part of things today, at least the guys who did get elevated during that time period, you are right to focus a spotlight right here and say we saw the best stuff of a number of these guys.
It was a real haves and have-nots roster.
Yes,
at this point, I
noticed totally.
There were the guys at the top, who were all doing well in some of their best work ever.
Yeah,
and then there was a lot of guys you call the lost generation. I mean, there were. I was shocked when we get to the Rumble that there was not a lot of duds in the Rumble. Because when you looked at the TV during this time period, there were a lot of guys that you have forgotten about. And they weren't in. So the roster was actually bigger than I thought.
Well, you know, still three brands at the time. You had the guys on ECW that for outside of three or four guys, they never cared about anybody in ECW at any given time.
Very true. Very true. But and there were a lot of guys, you know, who were just kind of hanging around. Your Shelton Benjamins who weren't being taken seriously to bring up a name. But
that's a real crapper get off the pot thing because he... I always thought that he deserved better than what he had because he had so much to offer. But by 2009, if you're not going to use him more than this, he shouldn't even be on the roster anymore.
Well,
because all it does is shine a spotlight on how he's been misused.
Yeah, and he kind of winds up leaving pretty
soon. He has no credibility.
But anyway, go back to the top. There was a lot of interesting stuff going on. We kind of talked about the heel side. You mentioned Jericho and Edge.
Yeah.
We're both doing really good. Randy Orton's obviously the biggest star.
Yeah.
Promotion coming into this show, coming off the huge angle where he punts Vince McMahon.
Right.
Second year in a row, a Vince death angle completely dropped, by the way.
That's right.
In 07, they dropped it for, you know, Benoit reasons.
Right.
This one, they just didn't follow up on when the stage fell on him and he did the infamous, Paul, I can't feel my legs on the stretcher. He kind of came back and they never touched on that, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So the heel side, especially compared to today, and by today I mean 2016,
mm-hmm.
the heel side was really strong in the company here.
That's right.
With Orton, Jericho, and Edge.
That's a great point.
On the babyface side, John Cena, by God, love him or hate him, had one of the biggest merch years in company history in 08.
Really?
Yeah.
Why 08 of all years?
I don't know.
Well, here's a funny thing,
but all
thing
I know
too.
Is I was doing the reading, and they said other than Austin in his peak years, no one ever did better merch than John Cena did in 08.
Okay.
Which, again, you know, we're going to start, again, going back to today, being 2016, we're going to start to compare Roman Reigns to John Cena.
Right.
And while both had the issue of getting booed on the bigger shows by the hardcore audience, Cena at least had some metrics to lean on where you can say it's like, okay, this booing, it's weird. It doesn't sound good on big shows. It hadn't happened really before to the number one babyface in a company, but he moves merchandise. He does well at the house shows. There were things to lean on. There was absolute justifications, clearly, to having John Cena as your number one babyface. Now, they also had other good babyfaces. Jeff Hardy was the real rising star on SmackDown, had a couple great matches, one with Triple H who's a babyface here, a terrible babyface, I think. But nevertheless, near the top of the card, as you know he will be. A great match at No Mercy in October. And then he wins the title at Armageddon. So Jeff Hardy comes into the show as the SmackDown champion.
Right.
He was, for all intents and purposes, the number two babyface in the company at this point.
He was. He was. And as far as number one goes, I find this very interesting because this is the real dichotomy stretch of the John Cena mega push years. His defining title run, I think most of us would agree, was when he went, what was it, I think 13 months from late 06 to our late 07.
Yeah, he didn't lose it. He got hurt.
Yeah.
We talked about
that. Yeah, got hurt. Had it taken off him that way. But then from that point on, you go to November of 08. It took that long for him to get the belt back. So for most of 08, he was beltless and or injured as he was in the fall. Very interesting. That's his best merch year. I mean, I think it really kind of puts the lie to the whole Vince thing of he needs to be on top to sell merch. If you're telling me 08, which is one of his most unsuccessful in-ring years kayfabe-wise, he sold more merch than just about any other time? Very interesting.
That is odd because you're right.
Kayfabe-wise, it's probably the worst year of the John Cena big run, isn't it? Lost at WrestleMania.
That's right.
Lost at SummerSlam to Batista in their first matchup.
Gets hurt again.
Gets hurt again.
Yeah. And you're right. Yeah. And he was out. He missed what? Because he comes back at Survivor Series. He only missed 2 months.
Yeah. Well, you know. Magic healing powers.
Yes.
Wink and a nod.
So anyway, they had some guys on top that were pretty good. Now, we should mention Batista's injured here.
Yes.
So he's out of the picture. That was kind of a big loss.
That was a big one.
But they had some stuff to work with, and that surprised me as I went back into my research for the show. Like, you know, I kind of was like, yeah, this is going to be a ho-hum show. I'm not going to care much. It'll be whatever. But there was a lot to hang your hat on, which kind of makes the road to WrestleMania, and we'll table that for now and get back to it at the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it all the more frustrating because they actually had stuff going for
them. Could have done a lot more.
You know,
yeah.
You talked about with 2008 and how it was kind of a miracle they were able to pull out a decent road to WrestleMania there, and that WrestleMania did a good number in Orlando. This is kind of like the opposite of that, where they had a lot seemingly going into this show, and they did squander it, I think, whereas 08, it didn't seem like they had much at all going for them, and they kind of pulled the old rabbit out of the hat.
But it was tightly focused, and it was a thing where,
what was
again,
tightly focused?
The road to WrestleMania and the Rumble show itself in 08, because I said to you when we were doing this, it had that pulsing urgency to it, whether it be part of it is MSG, the energy you get when you're at MSG that's unique from anything else. But, I mean, that entire show, there was just a buzz to it. And they needed that in 09. And when you look at the big dropped balls in company history, you know, we talk about the invasion and other things like that. I'm going to say a very underrated thing that should be on this list is failure to do anything at all with WrestleMania 25. Because this is the kind of thing, a year to a year and a half out, this should be like your Manhattan Project. We are going to use this entire time, this entire build, because they got in the habit, starting with WrestleMania 20. Do you remember with WrestleMania 20? They talked about it the whole year. That's one of the only times
I
ever remember
that. I know that, like, I can see where you'd be. There was some discussion, from what I understand and reading, and what's interesting about this road to WrestleMania is a lot of the stuff that was speculated on just didn't happen.
Okay.
I know Hogan was politicking to get on this show. They didn't want him.
That might be what led to him leaving for TNA later in the year. Well, he was gone, but you know what I mean.
Meltzer, I was surprised by this, was talking a lot and entertaining the possibility of Austin wrestling on this show. He was inducted in the Hall of Fame, remember?
Right.
And this is a show in Texas, so I could see that. But
and
there's
the announcer slammed the door on it, because I remember when he got inducted, you remember he came out of WrestleMania, he took the victory lap in his SUV or whatever the hell it was, that little, you know, hillbilly wagon, and the announcers are like, well, that closes the door on one of the greatest careers of all time. And I'm thinking to myself, first of all, he retired 6 years ago, but second of all, like, it seemed odd that they said that there. Maybe they felt like they needed a punctuation to it after he didn't wrestle at WrestleMania 25. You may not even remember that part.
No, I do, but
okay.
It was discussed, I know, internally, to do the idea of doing Austin Rock at this show, like months in advance. Like, you're talking about long-term planning. I think when WrestleMania 25 was first discussed, which is probably like summer of 08, or who knows when it was, the first big idea that they had was, we'll do this the two big stars, Austin and Rock. Well, Rock couldn't do it. He was busy in Hollywood. And Austin, I just don't think, wanted to. And Hogan was really politicking for a match with Austin, and Austin just didn't want to work with Hogan.
Well, the other thing about Rock, too, and I don't think we've ever talked about this on the show. These are all rumors, but there were persistent rumors coming out of the summer of 07 that the Rock's whole thing, because of getting big in Hollywood, the marketability, whatever, was that post-Benoit, Rock's attitude toward them was, I'm not going to come back till you guys clean up your act. And isn't it interesting that they were a couple of years into PG before he did come back? Yeah. To me, that lends some credence to it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what this so that's what they didn't do. There was no Austin. There was no Rock. There was no Hogan at WrestleMania 25. But let's
even with what they had, though, I think it's still inexcusable.
I'm going to get into that. But
sure.
You know, it's funny. Maybe they just didn't. And I know that to you, it's inconceivable. Maybe they just didn't view this one as like the big historical one. I know 25 is a key number.
It's bigger than 20. It's bigger than 30, and they did a much better job.
That's
with both
what I'm
of those.
But what's interesting, like, so 10, they really played off the history, if you remember. I mean, and with 10, they were talking about a lot of guys who weren't even with the company. You know, I mean, Hogan was pretty close to actually appearing for WCW by that point. And they showed a lot of his old stuff. Remember, in between every match of that WrestleMania, they showed an old WrestleMania match, highlights from one. They really played up the history for 10. 20, it seemed, was a big history when they opened that show with, and it's kind of funny we're talking about this in 2016, Vince and Shane and Shane's son.
Okay.
And, you know, WrestleMania 20 was where it all begins again. Remember, that was the
That's
big
right.
headline. So, okay, I guess they squandered some history or the opportunity to play off the history of WrestleMania.
There's another thing, too. I know you're going to call me Nelson Nitpicker for this, but I'm going to say something in terms of their marketing because, again, I'm a marketing guy and these things bother me. It really bothered me, number one, because it was a missed opportunity. Number two, because it was a lie. It wasn't the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. That would be the next year.
Oh, yeah, they always do that. They always screw that up.
But here's the thing. You can use it twice. This is WrestleMania 25, then you get to 2010. It's the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania.
Yeah, they always get that anniversary thing wrong.
Yeah, and that's where
I don't think do they not know? Is this something like Vince doesn't know what anniversary really is and like everyone's
Vince,
afraid
to Vince, I do not think that word means what you think
I mean,
it
I'm
means.
Not going to speculate because I don't know, but they always misuse anniversary. They misuse anniversary more than Gorilla Monsoon misused literally.
That bothered me at the time.
That was
it really
a good
did.
Joke, by the way. I don't know sell that.
All right, well, okay.
All right, so let's talk about what they did do. One thing, again, delving back into the time period and in my notes and then just watching the show, one thing that I respect with this show, and not all of them worked, but I found it in such stark contrast to the reality era. This show had some red-blooded wrestling angles, which you don't get anymore. You don't get like, oh, why are these guys having a match? And, you know, you watch a card now, like we just went to this Fastlane show.
Right.
There wasn't a lot of meat to why are these people wrestling.
Right.
They did, with the exception of the first two matches, but, you know, both the Raw title program, the SmackDown title program, and then into the Rumble, there were big overreaching storylines there that it's like, okay, that's what was going on in this time period. Whereas I fear when we maybe look back at the current time period, this reality era, 6-7 years from now, we're going to be like, wait, why was this guy wrestling? I mean, I thought I was going to have that watching this show, but when I got in, it was like, oh, okay, this is what was going on. This makes sense.
Well, you know, it's funny, too. I mean, you talk about the Raw title match. That's one where, if anything, the champion was sort of the third banana in the angle.
Well, yeah, I'll bring that up, absolutely.
Sure.
But we'll get into this now. There's one story I want to talk about. We referenced it already.
Okay.
The Orton punting Vince.
Yep.
That had just happened the week before on Raw, and it was a huge deal. And Orton couldn't have been hotter going into the show.
Well, and then the announcers at the outset coming in doing the Owen voice of like, oh, the show must go on, you know?
Yeah, that was a little...
Come on.
Yeah, the McMahons, they would want it, yeah.
Yeah. Vince would have wanted it this way.
Yeah, he
would. Come on. suck my balls. Well, I don't want to hear that crap.
They did. What were they going to do? What would you have done then?
Just like, you know, this is what happened on Monday. Vince isn't here. If we hear anything about his condition, we'll update you.
Okay.
Let it go. That's what I did.
That was their way of doing it.
Of course, typically overwrought.
I don't know. To me, it was Orton was still, it wasn't until the next night on Raw, ironically enough, that things began to take a turn for the worse. But we'll get to that afterwards. So that was the big angle here. A few notes I have before we get to the actual show. With the PG stuff, we had more of that. The FU was no longer the FU.
That's right. See,
I think it was actually kind of a what a maneuver or that maneuver at this point. They had not fully settled on attitude adjustment yet.
Okay.
I believe that blading by this point was a no-no, although Taker bled in the Rumble.
Right.
So.
Good question.
Yeah, I was confused because I thought Vince ixnayed the blood because of the Michaels Jericho program.
Maybe Byron Saxton flipped a blood capsule on Undertaker.
But I thought that one of the Michaels Jericho matches was too bloody. And
that's right.
Vince is like, okay, no more blood.
I think you're right about that.
Speaking of blood.
Well, that was the year that they went to PG in 2008. So it kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going PG, get rid of the Crimson Mask. Yeah.
Speaking of blood. This is something that maybe I bet you didn't think about.
Mm-hmm.
Was 2008 the year that the UFC officially, and I'm using air quotes, passed the WWE? Certainly, in like I remember, I think 2007, I was still working for PKW alongside our good friend Jake Digman. And there were clear signs that they were going to take over. But I think like 2008, they kind of really whipped the WWE pay-per-view overall.
I think so. I think that probably was the
And that was
period.
Kind of like a big thing. The UFC was like super hot because the fall of 2008 was when Lesnar won the title, the heavyweight title, when he beat Randy Couture, I think. And that led to them doing their best business ever in 2009. So that's an interesting thing with WWE pay-per-view. That they're not the hottest ticket on pay-per-view anymore during this
period. That's right. They've been the top dog ever since vanquishing WCW.
Yeah, and as we said, this Rumble did not do nearly as well as the 2008 Rumble. I should look this up. You know, as much as I look at these things, I don't write them down, which is always lovely. But let me look up WWE.
Well, you're right about that because it was WrestleMania also, I think, that dipped. In regards
WrestleMania
to the year
didn't dip as much as you think. We'll talk about that when we get to the
Not as much as it deserved to. Anyways.
What the hell did I just hit here, man? I just had a bunch of goofy-ass stuff on Wikipedia. Here we go. Let's take a look here. WWE pay-per-view. Because I think we talk about 2008 was a nice increase from 2007. Maybe that had to do with the Jeff Hardy title chase is what we had surmised.
Could be.
This one was...
the money's in the chase.
Yeah, this one was down pretty big. So 2008, if you recall, did 533,000.
That's really good for a Rumble, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
This year's 2009, about to talk to, did 450.
Okay.
They actually beat that the following year slightly. And this was kind of the benchmark they would stay at for the next 4 years, give or take.
Okay.
Would be 450. They had the big jump in 2013 when The Rock
again.
The Rock worked on the show. And then by 2014, pay-per-view business began to get cannibalized because of the network.
It's so funny because 10 was also a better... I mean, not wildly, but a better card and a better Rumble than this one. So it's interesting how the quality of this pegged to the buy rate. You wouldn't think that there'd be any kind of a correlation because you don't know going in. I mean, maybe it's just a thing of, like, I guess a bad build can alienate people.
Yes,
I mean,
2009 absolutely.
Had a bad build, you know, so yeah. I mean, that's what it was.
Okay. I don't know why this would be again, that 2008 number was just a good number, I think,
right.
is when you look at it. Because
but I think the show even underperformed the bill, to be honest with you.
Yeah. 2007 did 491, which was down 50-plus from the previous year, 50,000-plus from the previous year. So this was the lowest-bought Rumble since 98, which was 351, but that was before the boom. That
sometimes you do get
happening.
What you deserve in life, because, again, this show really was not good.
I think you're kind of I found this to be an average show overall. An average Rumble.
I didn't like it, and I especially didn't like the Rumble, but we'll get to that.
Shall we talk about the show?
Gotcha.
The opening video.
Historical
I thought was
one.
Great,
yeah.
It was historical?
I have in my notes that it was kind of a historical one, yeah.
Oh, yes, they talk about, they show the history of the Rumbles. Okay, I thought you meant like it was historically great. I'm like,
No.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That,
no,
but,
they talk about what the Rumble means and everything. And
right.
They got that, you know, that, what's that song they kept playing? It was
I
like
did,
some popular song
of it,
at the time. Okay, well, anyway, I noted that they did this real cool cut. They'd shown all the guys that were going to be in the Rumble, and then it did this cut, and then you hear the Voices Randy Orton theme song, and then it went into the angle of him punting Vince the week previous. That was a vicious kick, by the way. I heard Vince asked for it. God bless Vince for saying, hey, you know, kick me a little
harder.
He did.
And then, of course, Michael Cole invoking Kemper Arena with the show must go on.
I think you're a little off base with
that. You don't think he was deliberately invoking Kemper Arena? Okay.
That I think you're stretching.
We agree to disagree.
Bit. You're
all
stretching
right.
it a little much.
Okay.
I don't think that's what they were doing.
All right.
Quite. You can be morose and you don't have to invoke Kemper Arena. Okay.
That's the other place I remember hearing that phrase in WWE lexicon. Vince saying it backstage. That's the only other WWE event that I associate with the phrase "the show must go on." Well, that and the first SmackDown after 9/11, another landmark in great taste from the WWE.
That was not a good look.
Anytime, believe it or not, just with this being a kayfabe,
you're right. You're right. I guess okay. I'll say this: the show must go on. When I hear that phrase,
right.
I do associate it with
bad moments.
Owen
in
Hart.
Time.
Yes. All right.
And 9/11.
They shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
But
well,
they can't resist themselves.
Okay. Well, anyway, I thought the opening video did a great job at getting over Randy Orton and how hot he was at this time.
Yeah.
And you've said many times this was peak Orton.
It was. It was.
During
it
this
absolutely
period.
Was. And it's interesting, too, because Orton was the one guy that they were pushing so strongly going into this thing. And then, spoiler alert, Orton winning the Rumble. That there's a lot of years where I think there's way more years than not that they don't do this. In other words, like you go into the Rumble and you don't really kind of have any sense of who's the man to beat or whatever. This is one of those rare times, and Austin 98 is another one of these ones. You can probably think of them off the top of your head where, like, going in, it's like, oh, okay, they're leading you to believe so-and-so is going to win the thing, and then so-and-so actually wins the thing.
Yeah, and sometimes it's right. I mean, I think a lot of people at the time
Ray in
06, that was kind of predictable.
That was kind of a bad thing, but Ray in 06 was kind of the same way, wasn't it?
I wouldn't go this far. This was like... We'll talk about that when
okay.
we get to the Rumble, about
okay.
whether it was too predictable, whether predictable can be good with Orton. Or
sure.
We'll get to that there.
I'm not even saying too predictable, just that, like...
Orton was clearly the focal point of the promotion coming into this show.
Right, but I'm saying that...
And needed to win. Like, it,
sure.
like it, he absolutely should have won this Rumble.
Right, and having said that, I'm going to be fair here. You need to have varieties in your Rumbles from year to year. Especially if a couple of chodes are going to sit down and try and review each and every one of them that you ever did.
Yeah.
So you can't do the same thing every year.
Agreed, yes.
And so I'm not criticizing that he was the focal point, because some years somebody needs to be. It just strikes me that that's the exception to the rule. Most years there's not a focal point. A clear focal point, like, oh, so-and-so is going to win this.
I felt the early ones all had focal points.
Big John Studd, really?
Not that one.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
You always have to pick the exceptions.
All right, Hogan in 91, yeah, sure.
Like Yokozuna 93, Lex and Brett 94, Shawn 95, 96.
That's because the roster was so thin in the mid-90s.
Okay.
There was only like, you could count on one hand and have three left over who was going to be a plausible
okay.
winner.
Okay. Shall we get into the card?
Sure.
Jack
sure.
Swagger versus Matt Hardy, anyone? ECW title match?
You always look at me cross-eyed when I say that Jack
I've
Swagger
never been
had
cross-eyed.
Like some young angle going
That's
for him.
That's a ridiculous take. I actually have in my notes, I was never a fan of Jack Swagger.
I think
he was terrible on the mic. Now, that being said.
Not great on the mic. I'll give you that.
This was a decent little match.
Although We the People was not bad.
Yeah. Coming from you, I'm not shocked. It's a shoot in your world. This was a decent little match. We should point out the title, the ECW title, had changed just 2 weeks earlier. Hardy, who had been the champion for a while and had been a pretty good ECW champion. You know, I mean, let's be honest, okay, he came back with a lot of fanfare in 05. You know, he'd sort of created that fanfare for himself.
Right.
Complaining about what had happened to him with Edge and Lita. He was never their guy. Matt Hardy.
That got him out of the doldrums singles-wise. He'd had some nice runs as a tag team with Jeff in like 06 and I think maybe even 07.
Yeah, we're talking
about
the Eminem match in 07.
Yeah,
but
as a singles guy, you're right.
They
fell
never
off.
Viewed him as a star. But,
right.
You know, him being ECW champion, and we'll talk about this with Christian down the line as well, too. He got to find his niche and have good title matches, even though that no one really cared about that title. In the
way that I came to view ECW,
grand scheme of things,
once it became WWE CW,
which was very quickly.
Yeah, I came to view it. I don't know if you ever saw it that way, in terms of how they, because again, back in the days, like the smaller territories were like where you develop guys, whatever. I kind of saw it as though he was like the Southern Heavyweight Champion in the Florida territory. That's kind of like how I saw the ECW promotion.
Yeah. I mean, it was a mistake ever using the initials ECW.
I agree.
Because it was never going to be what some people wanted it to be. And it just couldn't be. They could not do the original ECW. They just couldn't. They're on TV.
It should have been an outright developmental thing as NXT is
now,
NXT, and separate from the big two.
What they wanted ECW to be is what NXT is now.
Exactly.
I mean, NXT in a much shorter period of time is much better than ECW.
Although the difference is, and this is a positive difference, is that when guys go down there for freshening up, rehab of image, whatever, they're not going to be the champ. Matt Hardy, they were still counting on names to be the champ there. Jack Swagger was like the first time, I think, that a guy coming right out of developmental became the champ very quickly in ECW.
And I'll say this. I think I already did.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad little match. I kind of like the contrast of Swagger looking to make it a wrestling match and Hardy looking to make it a brawl.
I like most amateur wrestlers going into wrestling. They bring a lot to it. I like that. There's a smoothness
I'll be honest
to them.
Maybe it's because it's the opener.
Mm-hmm.
Crowd was kind of hot for this. That I was like, yeah, you know, for a Jack Swagger match, this kind of held my attention. I'll tell you what I did not like in this match.
I know what this is going to be.
Your boy Matt Stryker. I am not looking forward to doing the 2010 show because I'm sure, I know he did the entire WrestleMania show in 2010.
Yep.
And he did most of the pay-per-views in 2010 with the main team.
Yep.
I am not looking forward if I got to listen to him for 3 hours.
Did you know, Kyle Ross, that Matt Hardy was trying in this match to become the first Carolinian to win a title on a WWE pay-per-view in Detroit since Ricky Steamboat in 1987 at WrestleMania 3?
That was okay. I just felt like he was trying too hard.
Well, here's
the
thing.
Facts. And I'll tell you what. When Jack Swagger came out and he said, and I quote, "Jack Swagger is the embodiment of the 21st century," I just rolled my eyes and said, well, somebody frickin' give this guy the old Yeller treatment.
I don't know. You know. Swagger's a guy that they were pushing a lot. I'm not as down on him as you are.
I hated Matt Stryker in the WWE.
All right. Matt
Stryker.
The only
person who hated Matt Stryker in the WWE more than I did, it was Jerry Lawler.
Well, okay. That could be possible. But, all right, Matt Stryker or heel Michael Cole? Come on.
God, heel Michael Cole is the worst.
Absolutely. Thank you. So let's keep it in some perspective, right, shall we?
So this match is okay. I think it's like a 3-star-ish match for the opener. I thought it was a good little match.
I don't know if I'd say 3.
Swagger retaining relatively clean.
Maybe
as
2.
As a matter of fact, very clean.
Maybe 2 3/4 at the most, but I don't know. I mean, it was decent enough, I thought.
Hardy was having a lot of good matches at this time period.
Sure.
As the ECW champion. And he, as we know, and we'll talk about, had to lose to set up the big angle later that he was
involved. Well, and that's the thing, too. It was sort of not exactly angle alert as far as what was going to happen, because I was surprised when I saw it because I didn't know it was coming. But it was striking watching it, because this is often the setup for something dramatic to happen with a babyface. Gets beat clean, and the announcers were kind of doing the "where does he go from here" kind of a deal.
It's very one of those things that when, although the angle we'll get into with him and Jeff, had some plot holes. When you look back, at least if you just look at it on this show, you can see that, like, you know, the producers, the announcers were on the same page. They were actually pushing a storyline that paid off. Them saying that there was a payoff later in
that's
the show.
That's right.
Where does Matt Hardy go from here? And we find out.
Right.
Where you and I, go from here is Melina Beth Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Your Divas title match. Not a lot to say here. Beth Phoenix, by the way, very trendy entrance music for 2009, I found. Very sounded a lot like The XX.
That's right.
You know, and not that it's a good entrance song, but, you know, at least it had its finger on the pulse of maybe, you know, more underground music than the active rock nonsense like, I had voices in my head that you heard from other guys. Still not a good song, but it was, you know, kind of what was going on in the more indie-ish community, I think, with Phoenix's entrance music.
It kind of was. And what was again, to what I thought was a fairly nondescript match, although at least not a bad match, I thought.
There was one great spot.
It's probably where Molina was showing the kind of flexibility that Dave Bautista became aware of.
There were two great spots in this match.
The kicking in her own head?
Yes.
One, that was pretty sweet.
When Beth had her in, what, an ankle lock?
Something like that.
Yeah, and she kept it. Sorry, Edge. She took her foot and kept ramming it into Molina's head. Molina's own foot into the back of Molina's head. That was a great spot.
That was amazing.
Having completely forgotten about this is one thing I had just no frame of reference for. Couldn't have told you who was going to win when I was just watching it. Were you shocked when Molina went over? Because I was like...
A little bit. Because Beth was a bigger star during this time
period. And she was being pushed hard. But then again, given the way they book, especially today...
Right.
I guess shame on me for not figuring Molina won, because Beth took like the whole match and they were pushing her as unbeatable. And then she loses. I kind of hate that booking.
Right.
And by kind of, I mean do.
Right.
But Molina, I don't remember her doing anything very big as champion.
Well,
so this was probably the wrong call in retrospect.
And today, where things are really good in the sense of treating the Divas title seriously, the title changes today mean something. At that time, they were passing it around like water, basically.
It'll be interesting to see where they go.
Beth probably wanted back on Raw the next night.
It'll be interesting to see where they go with the quote-unquote Divas Revolution.
Right.
And if it takes off, it gets even close to the heights they want it to.
Right.
If we look back at these women's title matches in this era and are just like, this, whatever. Remember,
women's
wrestling was a joke. Santino Marella, by the way, was in Beth's corner. I liked Santino as kind of like the chicken shit heel to Beth Phoenix in this. Unfortunately, though, it did lead to Santina at the WrestleMania 25 Battle Royal, which is not something that anyone fondly remembers.
No. And unfortunately, that was, I think, the beginning of his face turn. I do want to say this about Santino, because
Santina Marella?
For as much as, again, as a face, as a comedy face, he is one of my most loathed characters ever. But again, as a heel, being funny... And this is a cautionary thing looking ahead for New Day. I hope that when New Day makes their turn that they don't become like Face Santino, although I fear that they will. But there was one great thing from when he was a heel. And I was trying to look this up online to say who he was saying this about. There was some kind of argument he was having in the hallway. Not during this show, but during this roughly this time period. Having an argument with a diva in the hallway backstage during the show. And I think, like, she slams a door in his face, and he goes, "I cannot believe I used to pleasure myself to that woman." And I was like,
that's
okay, that's one of the finest things I've ever seen.
That's good. You know what kind of it's interesting you went in the direction of the New Day, you went to the present.
Uh-huh.
I look back to the past for a comparison for Santino, how he just became, like, just the worst when he became a face.
Who?
Doink.
Doink, yeah.
Doink was great. A clown that makes children want to cry is great.
Yes.
A wrestling clown in the traditional sense is atrocious.
Well, and like Hornswoggle was never good, but like Face Santino was like Hornswoggle level bad, of where, again, we talk about this all the time. Non-fans walk in the room and see you watching wrestling and you just hide your head like, I know, man. I know.
He became pretty cringeworthy.
Yep.
I referenced... As my voice does some weird octave thing like it always does. Oops. Can we edit these things out when my voice does that? I don't like that. Let's start again.
Could, but won't.
Okay. I referenced at the top that there were some actual wrestling angles.
Yep.
On this show.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, the first that we'll get to, I suppose, is this HBK-JBL storyline. Which brings us to the Raw title match of John Cena versus JBL.
I haven't seen acting like this since Boogie Jam 84.
Yeah. So, it's obviously a very silly storyline that no one really bought.
Right.
Had HBK not been involved, I think it would have been really horrific.
A ham-handed thing playing on the economy, Great Recession, fall of 2008. Yep. Hey, let's be topical.
Yes.
Always cringe when Vince says, let's be topical.
Now, I think... It's one of those things that people forget even happened.
Yeah.
Because it only lasted 2 months, actually.
That's
right. It went December to February. And it fell in between Michaels' unbelievable program with Jericho and then the match with Undertaker at WrestleMania. So it's, I guess it's easy to understand why it was forgotten. So let's rehash it, shall we?
Yep.
After Michaels loses to Jericho in a ladder match at No Mercy, they begin a storyline where he had, quote, squandered all of his money. And JBL, like, becomes his benefactor?
I think it was supposed to be, like, the stock market crash. Like, his investments went sour.
No, like, didn't he, like, say he, like in the eight, like, he always helped out buddies and stuff like that? Yeah, but the bottom line is, we were supposed to believe that Shawn Michaels was broke. Now, why he just wouldn't continue wrestling for the WWE for the job he was presumably under contract for really made no sense. But apparently, Shawn Michaels was in need of some quick cash. So in comes John Bradshaw Layfield, America's favorite entrepreneur.
I feel guilty as hell for making this joke, but I think Bernie Kosar could have sued him for gimmick infringement.
Did Shawn Michaels ever try to saw a French bread?
Probably not.
So we were supposed to believe that Michaels needed JBL's money.
Yeah.
No one really bought that.
Right.
It wasn't a very good storyline. But it was a wrestling storyline.
It was.
And, you know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And, you know, even though this one didn't work that much, I kind of respect that they at least tried something.
Right.
There was a storyline. It just wasn't, two guys kind of wrestling for a bunch of buzzword reasons like we get in this reality era. I did think that against all odds, on the go-home show, Raw, the previous Raw for here, they did a good job with the angle.
Right.
At that contract signing where Cena was like, oh, I'm so disappointed in you, Shawn, for going along with this JBL. And Shawn was like, I'm sorry to hear that, John. And they did the two-on-one beatdown. And Michaels actually got some real heel heat for that. And this match, you kind of referenced it earlier. Cena, this is very unusual for Cena, was almost a backdrop to the storyline here.
Yeah.
Because all the focus during this match was on what is Michaels going to do. So JBL had given him the edict, you have to help me win the title here, and then you'll be, you know, you'll be set for life. I'll give you all the money you need, and you don't have to, you know, do what I say anymore.
Right.
So that was the big storyline coming into this match. Did I explain that well?
Yeah. No, you explained it.
Okay.
You explained it. And it was interesting, too, because we didn't know it at the time, but JBL was going to be going out at WrestleMania. This was going to be it for him because of his back once and for all. He knew it, apparently. But what's really interesting is that he came back in 2008, and what was interesting was on the front end of the run, remember that there was a thing, I think he had like a no-holds-barred match or something, where he beat John Cena in John Cena's ill-fated 2008. It was a gimmick match, but he beat him.
It was like a New York street fight or something.
Yeah, because they revived the old JBL-Cena thing here, and JBL's like, you know, I'm what's responsible for the John Cena monster. If I would have beat him then, I'm going to whatever. And then, like, he kind of got over on Cena a little bit. He moved on to the world title picture. So this is what's interesting is because this was kind of wrapping up a little bit of the previous year. It was a backdrop to all of the JBL Shawn Michaels stuff. But for anybody with any kind of memory watching it, it's kind of like, oh, that's right. You know, he kind of got the better of Cena last year. And now this is Cena's chance to redress that a little bit.
You know what's funny?
What?
You just touched on basically all of my notes.
Oh!
Match, or at least the majority of them. No, it was really good.
Great minds think alike.
So, I have...
I didn't know if you would have picked up on that or not. Okay.
No, no. Okay. Well, I have a lot of...
That's right, though.
Dave Shearer's gimmick here with a bunch of rhetorical questions.
Okay.
Remember those? Those were always bad.
It's sort of...
Those were always bad. Dave Shearer's raw rhetorical questions. Those always sucked.
Probably
I could never rip them either when we were at the station.
I remember those in the same.
Or did I rip them anyway?
I think you did anyways. Okay. I remember those in the same spirit of mind. I'm sure with anyone remembers being touched by an uncle when they were a kid.
Jesus, you always take things just one step too far.
I'm just being honest.
Jesus, first Cole with Kemper Arena voice, and now that.
Yeah, well,
I mean, Jesus, I didn't like him, but it didn't like that. So
you're the one who brought it up.
Yeah, I'm sorry I did. So, remember what I said about JBL being more effective as a heel in a non-main event role. I talked about in 08 when he worked against Jericho.
Upper mid-card, yeah.
Yeah, when he didn't have the pressure of having to, like, carry a world title program or help carry a world title program. He was, you kind of step back, you're like, oh, this guy's a pretty good heel.
Right.
Well, here he is back at the top of the card 1 year later. And it's tough to buy him. I just never liked JBL in the world title program. You touched on this. These guys had worked a lot against one another in the previous year. This is their fourth pay-per-view match.
Fourth?
Since May of
08. Holy crap. Okay.
Yeah, they worked a lot against each other in
the summer.
I remember
it being at least twice. Okay. Oh, wow. Remember the JBL is poopy thing spray paint on the limo with seen on Primetime in the previous year?
No, I don't.
Or Crime Time, rather.
No, I don't.
That was, yeah. So Cena had a short-lived alliance with Crime Time.
Oh, that's right. That was he didn't like it, though, I heard.
Well, because he didn't want to go back to the Doctor of Thugonomics gimmick, which is where they seem to be positioning him. But they came on and it was like, we're going to spray paint the limo, and he spray painted JBL as poopy on there.
It's really bad.
That is.
That is really bad.
Ladies and gentlemen, the John Cena post Doctor of Thugonomics character in a nutshell. That's it.
That is really
JBL
bad.
Is poopy.
I do not remember that. I didn't want to be told that.
Sorry.
And I hope when I leave this apartment today, I don't remember it ever again.
Condominium, but okay.
Okay, I apologize. I screwed that up. I screwed it up. Sometimes I call my condo an apartment, too, if it makes you feel better. One thing I do remember, and is worth remembering, this is nowhere near the best match these two had, which you I think kind of touched on.
Right.
Judgment Day 05.
That would have to be.
It was the I Quit match. It was kind of the blow-off of the feud, and then Cena wound up going to Raw. I think it was the last SmackDown-only show Cena worked.
I think so. Last pay-per-view, anyway.
So this match, I didn't expect much going in, and it wasn't that. It was all storyline.
Right.
We do need to reference, and there were some great Markish signs in this crowd at this show.
I missed the one you said
but
in particular.
But the absolute creme de la creme, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to save this mini episode from JVL is poopy, okay?
Okay.
There was a sign, and I freaking lost it. And I don't know why. I was in a good mood, but I had to make note of it. There was a sign in the crowd, HBK, huge butt kisser.
That had to be a plant, right?
No.
That had to be.
It was like, I think it's just like one of those things, like what a guy does, like, you know, NBC, nobody beats the Cardinals. He just knows he's going to get on TV.
Although, to be honest with you, after and this
huge butt kisser is kind of great.
Although I will say
God
this,
God bless the guy for because like no one really went along hating Michaels in his storyline, but God bless that guy if this storyline really got him to turn and question HBK's morals.
You know what?
Huge butt kisser.
They should have done it where Sean stops, sees the sign, and gets a pensive look on his face, strokes his chin a little bit.
They should have.
What have I come to? You know, that would have been awesome.
Huge butt kisser.
Although I will say this, though, and this will give away the timeline of this. After having just gone to Fastlane 16 and having seen some of these Roman Empire signs, I'm willing to take this at face value that somebody made that sign.
Huge butt kisser.
Yeah.
I laughed the whole match about huge butt kisser. I rewound to go so I can see the sentiment times. The match itself is nothing special, like I said, but this storyline did get over a little bit. So there was a ref bump, and Michaels comes in, and there's a question, what's he going to do? Because he's supposed to help JBL.
Right.
And he gives JBL sweet chin music.
Yep.
And the crowd goes kind of crazy for
it.
And Cena's like, yeah, man, that's the Shawn Michaels I know. And then Michaels kicks him, too.
Yeah.
Which was a nice twist.
And leaves.
You know, you could kind of see that coming. It kind of made Cena look like a jackass for not seeing it coming. The character Cena. Well, then he puts JBL on top and leaves.
Right.
And he's kind of like, well, I did my job here. Another ref comes down. Cena kicks out. And then wins the match kind of relatively short order after that, I think right away. He gives him the not FU for the win.
I have in my notes, I thought it was kind of a subpar match.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing that I will say is this.
It was better than two stars, but not much.
And where I'm going to give credit to JBL for this, because I'm going to assume, because JBL, you know, during his 04-05 run, he didn't always get the right kind of heat. A lot of times it was the so-called X-Pac heat.
No, because he shouldn't have been like,
right.
Again, JBL in a main event role is just not good. He's a good heel, but he's not a guy who can carry a brand.
Right, but here's the thing. JBL, at his best, gets heat, heel heat, better than most on the roster. I'm going to credit him.
Oh, he was great at the first one-night stand.
Sure. I'm going to credit him for what I'm about to say, which is this was not a split crowd. This was a pro-John Cena crowd. And I think it's John Cena being in there with evil dickhead JBL that was what got the crowd on Cena's side.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times...
We saw that with Umaga as well.
That's
two
right.
years prior,
that's
where
right.
it was not the 50-50 crowd that we had seen.
There was none of that. This was in
other John Cena matches.
And by the way, Detroit has been a tough town for John Cena in the past, among other ones. Detroit was the one where it was the Saturday night's main event leading up to WrestleMania 23. Remember that? Triple H pedigrees him in the middle of the – WrestleMania 22, rather. Triple H pedigrees him in the middle of the ring and gets a standing ovation. Shades of the current build to WrestleMania.
Yes,
also in Detroit, by the way.
Yes. Oh.
Also in the same building, no yes. less.
Triple H, when he walks into a building in Detroit, must just be like, you know, I know I'm a heel, but you know what I think I'm going to do tonight? I think I'm just going to babyface myself.
Yeah.
But Jesus, why doesn't he just walk out with Steve Eiserman next time?
Exactly,
you know?
10 years
Your
later.
Your boy, Steve Eiserman.
My boy, Steve Eiserman. Exactly 10 years later. But that's my point, is that, like, Detroit is not like a gimme town for Cena.
No.
Some of these smaller
the
ones
crowd
in the
was,
South.
The crowd was for Michaels at WrestleMania 23, too, speaking of
that's
WrestleMania
right, that's
23.
Right, yeah, because like some of these smaller mark towns in the
South. The huge butt-kisser.
Yeah, exactly, are going to be pro-Cena, but you know your bigger areas, generally not so. So I'm going to credit JBL for the crowd reaction in this one.
And then this HBK-JBL storyline, which seemed like it was finally getting a lot of heat.
Yeah.
They just kind of abruptly ended it. At the next pay-per-view, No Way Out. And then, of course, you know, I guess for the better, because Michaels moves on, wrestles Undertaker, and it's one of the best Mania matches ever.
That's right.
But they kind of had the feeling of Michaels wanted it to end so he could work with the Undertaker at WrestleMania.
They then fought for that amount of money, didn't they? The money that was supposed to be up. Because, like, the feud ended where...
It was like an all-or-nothing
was,
match or something.
He was made whole again, so whatever.
Yeah, which kind of was... It's funny when you watch it, I guess maybe if you're like a little smart of the business.
Yeah.
You read stuff online, you're like, okay, this is them basically admitting the storyline's not that good and Sean's got to move on to something better,
like,
for WrestleMania.
Kayfabe-wise, who was the booker? Bernie Sanders? We're supposed to cheer this guy getting a handout from JBL? Come on.
Did you ever hear this story? By the way, I'm going to just not touch that.
What did I
Although I did get Rand Paul earlier in the show.
Yeah, you did.
All right, we're one for one. 50-50 booking on the program here.
Classic example.
Have you ever heard this story about how a fan left this huge amount of money to Michaels in his will?
I did hear that.
Yeah, apparently it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, so...
Well, that wasn't part of the storyline.
No, well, of course not, because he... But I don't think Shawn Michaels has ever been... destitute is what I'm saying. I think he's always done well. I think it was like it was part of the reason that he never really rushed back, like after the back injury.
Well, that, and didn't he have one of these Lloyds of London deals?
Well, that, and there was a good part of that time period where he was hopped up on enough pills to, you know,
actually, no,
choke a smaller horse.
You know what? No. I wasn't. I'm remembering wrong. It wasn't Lloyd's of London. They were paying him a huge downside, like $14,000 a week for sitting at home. That's what it was. But anyway,
well, he redid his deal and it carried over. Like, he did his deal not that much longer before he actually got hurt.
That thing you recounted, didn't that come from like a Tammy Sitch shoot interview or something?
What?
About Sean getting left that money?
I don't know who started it, but I was actually just listening to another show and they were talking about it and I hadn't heard about it and I did a little work and I'm like, it seems true.
If you listen to her, it was supposed to be her moving into that house instead of the Nitro girl with him, but that's, you know, she's got her own version of history.
At least she didn't show up at Pawn Stars last night like we all feared.
Yeah. Oh, she's doing far too well to show up on Pawn Stars
yes,
these days.
Yeah. Well, yes, she's a different kind of star. That begins with P.
Yeah.
That wasn't that good of a joke by me.
You know what? I'll bail you out. That's like the time that it was during the NCAA tournament, and they were promoting stuff on the different stations, and True TV is one of the ones, and the show's Hardcore Pawn, I guess. And Charles Barkley was like, Hardcore Porn? What? Because like, he read it the wrong way.
Frickin' Chaz, man.
You gotta love that.
I do.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.